The Mike Lupica Podcast.
New York Daily News columnist and best-selling author.
Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody wants everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A billion-dollar industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello and welcome to the Mike Lupica Podcast. We'll be joined by Hall of Fame basketball coach Larry Brown momentarily, but first, this from Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico's been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. I've known Larry Brown for over 40 years. Everybody knows I think he's one of the greatest basketball coaches of all time. I think if you add in college, the ABA, and the NBA, he's won more games than anybody who's ever coached. He's still the only man to ever win an NCAA championship, an NBA championship in the same career. I have so much to talk to him about today in basketball. But first, people might not know this, but Larry Brown is obsessed with the New York Yankees. And after last night at Fenway Park, the first game of that series, seeing what Aaron Judge did, you must be feeling pretty good about your team right now, Coach.
Well, I like the direction they're going in, Michael. I can't believe I'm a Yankee fan. I grew up in Brooklyn, and I wore 42 every chance I could. I walked like Jackie Robinson. I love the Dodgers, but now since I've moved back to Long Island, you know, I've been following the Yankees. I like the fact that they've gone young, and they're trying to rebuild, and they got a lot of possibilities. Sometimes you have to take a few steps back to go forward, and I think they've made some real progress in that regard. Hopefully, the young kids will keep getting better, and Bird will start hitting.
Hey, Coach, what was it like? You know, my friend Pete Hamill was growing up in Brooklyn about the same time that you were. Can you even possibly describe what it was like those first few summers when Robinson showed up at Ebbets Field?
Well, the thing that, you know, football and basketball weren't as prominent then. We all played stickball, punchball, baseball, whenever we could. And those guys that played baseball at the time lived in your neighborhood and worked two jobs. You know, they played baseball during the summer and worked in the community in the winter. We used to follow them home. But I hate to say this, but I didn't know any difference. I didn't realize what Jackie Robinson was going through. I didn't understand that baseball wasn't integrated at the time. It never even entered my mind. My family never talked about it. We just loved the Dodgers. And when he came up, he was so electric, you know, running the bases and his enthusiasm for the game. I don't know. I didn't even think anything of it other than to know he was my hero. And I wanted to be just like him. And I think, you know, most kids growing up, as I did, thought exactly the same way.
You know, you were not kidding before. You're the only person I've ever known who taught himself to walk pigeon-toed because Jackie Robinson did.
No, I don't know. You know, I look at it now when I used to scout kids. Kids that were pigeon-toed generally were really fast. But, you know, all my mannerisms were like him. When I batted, I used to pat the side of my leg. I wanted a bottlehead bat because he used one. If I got on base, which was seldom, I danced around like crazy. I don't know. You know, Michael, when we grew up, we had real heroes. And he's become even a bigger hero now when I realize what he went through. And I had no idea at the time. I remember I was invited to Happy Chandler's place in Kentucky where he signed. And it blew me away because, you know, the more you read about him and understand what he went through, the more you appreciate what kind of human being he was.
We're talking to my friend, a Hall of Fame basketball coach, Larry Brown. He's the best basketball coach not currently working. All right, I got so many things to get to in the NBA playoff. You know, I always call you during the playoffs because there's nobody I want to talk to more about the playoffs. But before we get to the playoffs, Coach, how do you feel about the way that Carmelo Anthony has been treated this year by Phil Jackson and his general circumstances with the Knicks?
Well, I don't know privately what Phil Jackson thinks of Carmelo. I don't know what they talk about. But I think it's been difficult, you know, watching this whole process. I grew up a Knicks fan. You know, I used to play against Coach Holtzman, and, you know, he really helped me learn how to play, and I respected him as a coach so much. And I believe in my heart, New York needs to be great for the NBA really to flourish. I don't like reading what Phil says about Carmelo. I don't think it helps. I think Carmelo's handled it really, really well. I think probably if Phil had to do it all over again, he'd do it much differently, but it's not good for the Knicks. It's not good for the league. It's not good for Carmelo. Because if you don't think he can play in your system, do something about it, but do it privately. Because he's really damaged, you know, Carmelo's value. And I, you know, listening to some of the players and how they respect Carmelo, I don't think it's helped, you know, anybody in that locker room. And then the fact that he hadn't come out and backed the coach and been critical of him has blown me away. And to say that when he went away over the Christmas holidays, that's when they went bad.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I don't get it. If he was sitting on the bench and went away for the Christmas holidays and they went bad, then I could understand it. But I'm just hopeful there's some resolution where the Knicks a whole and Carmelo can go somewhere where he has a chance to win.
We're talking to Larry Brown. You know, Larry, the funny thing is, and I've crunched the numbers on this, and I don't have the exact numbers. You look at the 3 years before Phil Jackson got to New York, where Carmelo was being coached by Mike Woodson. And then you look at the Knicks record after that, and there's now this perception that Phil has kind of floated that if he can just get rid of Carmelo, then they can really start rebuilding. Coach, they won 54 games 1 year with Carmelo being the third most valuable player in the league and Mike Woodson and coaching them. So my question is, if he's such a bad guy and a bad teammate, those games must have won themselves when Woody was coaching him.
Well, you know I'm such a big fan of Mike Woodson. But I thought the key there was Jason Kidd and Rasheed Wallace and Kurt Thomas. Because if you look at the league, the best teams have great locker rooms, have veterans that teach young kids how to behave and how to be a pro and how to make sacrifices to help your team win. And we don't have enough of that. And when the Knicks lost those guys, I thought they lost their identity, and they lost the real chance to be good. And then when you go through a whole bunch of coaches, I don't know how you know, I admire Phil. He won 11 championships, a great coach. But I don't know how you can be an executive and go through the coaches that he's gone through and hope to reinvent Jeff Hornacek. Because anybody that watched Jeff Hornacek coach, he doesn't coach anything like Phil Jackson or like Phil Jackson envisions the game. And to bring him in and to try to have him change to the way Phil wants to be the game to be played, it's never going to happen. And it didn't happen with Rambis. It didn't happen with Fisher. And I don't think the triangle is going to happen with anybody unless Phil Jackson's the coach.
We're talking to Larry Brown. Here's my question, Coach. If there are no surprises in Carmelo Anthony's game, his game is fully formed, and yet Jackson gave him $120 million in a no trade clause. Can you explain that to me?
I don't know. That maybe, you know, every coach has been through times where you think your player is the greatest, and then 2 weeks later you think you can't play dead. And thank God you have people around you that, you know, get you back on track. But I think Carmelo has always played a certain way. It's like, to me, if your best player plays a certain way, and you trust him, you got to surround him with the kind of people that will make him be successful. And I think when he was having his great year, he had people around him that allowed him to be great, and Mike Woodson found a way to utilize him. And I still believe, you know, Carmelo can go somewhere and be great and make players around him better, but you have to accommodate him for the way he plays and accept that. I think he's a mismatch, Michael. I don't think he's a power forward. I don't think he's a small forward. I think he's a guy that you can create a mismatch for, and he'll hurt you. And he'll score the ball. And he seems to be a guy that players really like. Players on his team enjoy him. He's done unbelievably well in the Olympics with the best players. So I think if you're going to give him a no-trade clause and pay him that kind of money, you got to recognize his strengths and put people around him to allow him to be truly great.
How long before the kid Porzingis is going to start looking around? You know, Larry, you know Porzingis is looking at, say, a situation like Milwaukee, because I believe the Greek kid in Milwaukee, but before not very long, I believe he's going to play in an NBA Finals. I think they're building something that good, and he and Porzingis are about the same age, Antetokounmpo, and I'm sick, and I was able to say that name, Larry, so I think I deserve some credit for that. But he's got to be thinking that this might be the wrong situation for him to grow and flourish.
Well, I think everybody would love to play in New York. But I get nervous because he's established a relationship with Carmelo. He understands that Carmelo has made his transition easier, which I think is a huge thing. But when you look at the great young talents, you're exactly right. This kid is unbelievable. And they surrounded him with some pretty good young players. And Parker's going to come back. But my thing with Porzingis, I always thought, and I'm crazy, but I thought you should play him inside earlier and then move him outside. Let him learn to play in the post. Let him learn to play center. Let him learn to be a rim protector and a rebounder. And then let him expand his game as time goes on. Because I always hear Phil talking about transition defense and the triangle, you know, allows you to get back. Right. And he's absolutely right because of court balance, but not when you take bad shots, not when you take long threes, not when you have a 7'3" guy shooting three-pointers. You're not going to rebound the ball, and you're not going to get back. So I don't understand that, but I really don't understand the way the NBA game is going. The fact that you can't touch guys really troubles me, and the shot selections bother the hell out of me. It's just a different kind of game, but Porzingis, they got to keep him here, and I wish there was a way that they could make Carmelo work, you know, make it work out, especially with him going through the situation he's going through with his family. I'd hate to see him go anywhere too far where he's away from his kid.
Talking to Larry Brown. Coach, what do you make of the whole Russell Westbrook phenomenon? Because I'm of two minds about him. Obviously, he's one of the most gifted players I've ever seen. But, Coach, you know you can play a two-man game in basketball, and you can play a three-man game, but it's really hard to play a one-man game.
Yeah, but he's Allen Iverson, and I mean that in a really positive way. And I think you got to surround him with players that allow him to be great. And he can't play without a point guard in my mind. The only time Russell Westbrook should be a point guard is when he gets a defensive rebound and brings it up the floor. I think he should be somebody that you get the ball, move the defense around, and then let him go, because he's unstoppable. And I think they got to figure out how to build a team that way. That's just my personal opinion. But, you know, everybody said we didn't have talent when we had Allen. If we had talent that, you know, gave Allen a chance to be Allen. You know, the Eric Snows, the George Lynch, the Aaron McKees, the Mutombos, the Tyrone Hills. Those guys did little things to allow Allen to be Allen. And Allen didn't shoot a high percentage, but he created double teams. He gave us a chance to be a great rebounding team, and we had great defenders around him, and everybody respected the way he played. And I think when it becomes difficult for Russell is because he has to handle the ball so much, and the defenses can set up against him. They can stack. And if you played him off the ball, in my mind, and had a point guard and other playmakers around him, I think he'd still be as dynamic and his team would have a chance to win more.
Larry, no one respects coaches more than you do. Nobody has a more profound coaching tree. I mean, the sport from coach to coach, college and the pros, is littered with guys who worked for Larry Brown at some point. So I know how much you love Coach Holtzman. You have to respect the way Patrick Ewing put in his time as an assistant coach, as a Hall of Fame player, and finally got rewarded with a job at Georgetown.
Oh my God. That's, you know, when I got fired from Charlotte, Michael, when he fired me, said, "Who do you think I should bring in?" And I mentioned Dad Marley and Patrick Ewing, because I thought both of them were going to be great coaches and both of them would probably stand up to Michael, which I think Michael really needed. But to see what he's gone through in his career and how he's handled everything, to land in Georgetown is unbelievable to me. Because kids need people like him to be coaching them. You know, Patrick always had great respect for the game and great love for his coaches and great respect for his teammates. And I think young people need to have role models like that are coaching our sport. So I'm really excited about it, especially with Chris being at St. John's. You know, I look at the Big East. You know, the Power Conference has taken over all athletics in college. But the Big East in basketball is still relevant because you have guys like Jay Wright there. And now you look around the Big East, there's some tremendous coaches. So it's going to be fun. You know, seeing Patrick and having kids have an opportunity to play for him is going to be great.
You know, and I know that you have an odd history with Quinn Snyder, because we both remember at a birthday party you had once at 21, Quinn proposed to your daughter. They're no longer married, which was one of the most dramatic. You know, I thought it was a good party until then. I thought Doug Moe's speech would be the highlight of it. But then, lo and behold, there's Quinn Snyder on his knee proposing to your daughter. Coach, here's another guy who had it, lost it, and oh my goodness, what a job he's done with the Utah Jazz this year.
Yeah, I think they're, well, I don't buy what people say that they're not talented. You know, I think they got a lot of talent.
The kid from Butler, oh my Lord, Coach.
Yeah, Haywood is really good, and Gilbert is terrific. But what they've done bringing Mack and Boris Diaw and Joe Johnson to a group of young kids, I think really, really is incredible. And they all have roles. Quinn's really paid his dues. You know, he coached in the D-League. He coached in Russia. He coached, you know, with San Antonio. he's been all over the place, but he's always learned. He's always respected the game. And I think their team is a fun team to watch. They play the way the game used to be played. They share the ball. They defend. They take care of the clock. They just use their bench. It's a lot of fun to watch. And when you know what he's been through and what he had to overcome, it's great to see the success he's having.
You know, we both love Mike Woodson, and both are shocked that he doesn't have another head coaching job in the NBA. He's sitting next to Doc Rivers now in Los Angeles. Larry, we have to look, and by the way, I'm not writing off the Clippers, and by the time some people hear this, they may have come back against the Jazz. But it just hasn't quite worked out for Doc in L.A. the way he thought it was going to.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised, but I don't know if they really like each other, that team. And I don't think, you know, everybody that says you don't have to like each other to play together, I don't buy that. I don't think the pieces really fit. You know, it's just unfortunate. They got the best point guard. And I don't mean that, you know, to be critical of other unbelievable point guards. But when you consider both ends of the court, Chris Paul is pretty incredible. They got a shot blocker and rim protector and DeAndre. But they've always lacked, to me, a small forward that could score the ball. And I think their bench has always been lacking in order for them to achieve all the success, you know, that they did deserve. But Golden State is so good, Michael. I'm in awe of that team and the sacrifices a guy like Green makes every night. And then you always look at San Antonio. They always get the job done because they have a wonderful coach and they have pieces that respect the game and play together. But I don't know if the Clippers are the kind of team that really can go very far, because I think they have too many holes. And that's sad, because they have an unbelievable coach, an unbelievable, you know, group of players. But to me, they just don't fit.
We'll have more with Larry Brown, but first this from Barracuda.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit Barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
You know, you never know how an ex-player is going to respond as a coach. Obviously, Steve Kerr got dealt a great hand, but he not only has he done a wonderful job with them, with all those all-stars, Larry, they play a really nice game of basketball.
Yeah, they move the ball. They throw it to an open guy. They take shots that are difficult, but, you know, they're shots that those guys can make. They've all taken their egos and put it away for the good of the team. You know, I thought when they lost Bogut and, Harrison Barnes and, you know, just a bunch of guys, and all of a sudden they bring in McGee. They draft a kid that I recruited, Pat McCall. And they just find a way to keep winning because their coach allows them to play and defines their role, and they all accept it. And it's really pretty damn good. The saddest thing, though, Michael, is I heard David Robinson say this, and I believe it. A lot of kids think they're Seth Curry, and there's only one Seth Curry. And I don't think every team can play like Golden State, even though a lot of these analytic guys think they can. Golden State has a unique group of guys that are willing to be great but sacrifice for one another, and has a coach that allows them to be great. It's a pretty fine line. Either you don't find that all over the place.
You know, as you've watched Steph Curry this year, Larry, and you know, we've got a pretty good sample of him working with Durant. We'll get a greater sample now in the cauldron of the playoffs. Has he looked the same to you, Steph, this year?
I don't know. I think he's had to sacrifice a little bit, and sometimes it puts a little pressure on the way he plays. You know, sometimes when you have two unbelievable scorers and then all of a sudden you put that third guy out on the court and you've been used to scoring the ball and taking a lot of shots, it sometimes takes you a little while to adjust. But knowing Seth, he wants to win. He has a will, just strong will to win. And I think he'll figure it out. They're just so much better than everybody in my mind, Michael. I just can't imagine anybody being able to match up and play against them, because everybody now, if you look at the league, you look at Boston, they're all trying to go small. Well, think of Golden State going small. I mean, every one of their players, when aside from their center, when they play McGee, can play any position on the court, can handle the ball, can create a shot for himself or get his teammate a shot. I don't think everybody else can do that. And plus, you got Durant at almost 7 feet, and Green plays bigger than he plays, and every one of them tries to guard. It's just an awesome group, and I think it's going to be tough for anybody to play against them. You know, LeBron, when Cleveland beat Golden State the year before, LeBron, 90% of the time, when Bogut was out of the game, was the biggest player on the court. Now all of a sudden that stuff's going to change a little bit because of Kevin Durant.
Are you going to coach again?
Oh, I'd love to, Michael. I don't even care in what capacity. I truly believe that because of the people I coached, the people I played for, and the people that coached with me, that I have a lot to share before it gets too late. And in some way, I want to do that. I don't, you know, I get this feeling that if you're old, you can't relate to players. And I don't buy that. I think the league is getting so much younger that we have fewer and fewer people teaching kids how to play. We have all these workout coaches, but we don't have coaches and teachers. And then they say, well, these guys fail, and we got to get better players. Well, the young players don't fail. It's the people around them that fail them because they don't teach them how to play the game. And the young kids go to bad teams, Michael. You know, the early draft picks go to bad teams. And the reason... there's a reason some of the teams are bad. Maybe it's bad management. Maybe it's bad coaching. Maybe it's a bad locker room. The young kids need to be around teachers and quality players, older players that respect the game. So, you know, I badly want to get back and, you know, maybe be like a Tex Winter or Pete Carrell or Johnny Bock, somebody like that, where I can share what I've been taught.
You know, Coach, I was thinking, I don't know why I was thinking about him the other day, but you saw him at his best. You have the greatest sense of what might have been. And, you know, I haven't caught up with him in a long time. I'm talking about David Thompson. And, you know, several years ago, I went and did an Esquire piece on him, and he had rebuilt his life by then. But, oh, my goodness, Larry, when he was young, he was something to see.
Oh, my God. Well, I remember the night you and I met when we were in the garden with Ralph Simpson and David and myself, and you came up, and I remember you wrote an article saying the best player wasn't actually on the court. But if you look at the ABA then, with the fact that all those young kids got to play in a different kind of environment and a different style of game, David was Michael before Michael. David just lost his wife just recently, and you're right, he has recovered from a lot of the difficulties he experienced, but he never lost to North Carolina when he played in college. And I just read an article that, you know, the team that beat UCLA is going to be honored in the Greensboro Coliseum, you know, this year, that national championship team he played on. But David was phenomenal. And he got into the ABA, I think he was 20 years old. And things that he did every single night, it was like when I got to coach Allen, every night Allen would do something and we'd all look at each other and giggle and say, we've never seen that before. Well, I experienced that with David Thompson, you know, when he came into the league. He was 6'4", and he could jump out of the gym. He could shoot with range. He had the best first step of anybody I'd ever seen. And he was such a humble and nice kid. It was remarkable to see his growth. When he got 73 points against Detroit the last day in the season, when Doug Moe let, you know, George Gervin get 60-something that later on, David got mad at me thinking that we were trying to make him score the ball. And he was 20 for 22 at halftime with 50 points. And, you know, that was just the way he was. He was unbelievable. And I don't know if there'll ever be another one like him. And you mention his name to people now, and they don't even know who the hell he was.
Skywalker is one of the great nicknames. Talking to the great Larry Brown, who is, to my mind, as great a basketball coach as there ever has been. Coach, you know, I never say that what people are doing in sports requires more valor or courage than anybody else. So what Isaiah Thomas is going through with the Celtics, I don't separate him out, except that he plays an extremely public game, and his grief is played out in public. What an amazing story this has been for this kid over the last 10 days or so.
Yeah, I saw the first game, and they spent a lot of time focusing on him by himself, and then when Bradley came over and put his arm around him and, you know, given the moment of silence, I can't imagine being able to play after what he went through. But, you realize sometimes sports allows you to get through difficult situations.
Yep.
When you have a support staff like he obviously has with Danny and Brad and his teammates. I wish our world would understand that you could really learn a lot from being a part of a team. A lot of the problems we're faced today are not problems you see with the real teams. They accept each other for what we are, and there's great empathy, you know, with the guys you play with, and great respect, and we don't have enough of that. And to see what he's been able to overcome and see the way his teammates have supported him, it's some pretty incredible situation.
You know, Coach, you just said something that reminded me of something Bill Bradley said to me once. He said that a locker room is as great a civics and sociology class as there is anywhere on the planet. He was talking about the old Knicks. DeBuscher's a big white guy from Detroit, and Clyde's from Atlanta, and Earl's a street kid from Philadelphia, and he's a banker's son from Crystal City, Missouri, and on, and they just made it work.
No, you're right. I think it's the greatest lesson, and I don't think we understand that. When you see all these hate crimes and people protesting and not respecting one another and not loving each other for what we are and what we bring, the fact that you see the teams that get along and care about one another. They only want to know whether you can play and whether you're a good guy. That's all that matters, and then they learn to deal with each other and accept one another for what we are. It's pretty incredible. That's why I want, when kids are athletes, I want them to play an individual sport and a team sport. The individual sport, you learn to deal with yourself and not blame others. And then when you get with a team, you understand how to interact with people and accept each other for what they bring. So athletics, to me, is really what it's about. Everybody should be able to participate and learn what Bill Bradley said, because that is really what we should all aspire for. And I don't know. I know from my standpoint, I've had a lot of friends in my life, but the ones you play with as a team are the ones that are your closest friends, and it's a pretty neat thing to feel.
I assume that also encompasses your golf partners. I assume that when you talk about teams, you're talking about the teams you and I have played in when we're trying to win money in golf. You do mean that, don't you, Coach?
Yeah, you got to rely on people no matter how deficient they might be.
Hey. You know, one year I invited Larry Brown. We play this big charity softball game out in East Hampton, the Artist Writers game every year. And I said, Coach, you got to come play some year. And he said, well, I'll come play, Michael. I can do pretty much everything I could ever do in baseball except for one thing. And I said, what's that? And he said, back up.
That's right. I was, you know, that was a great event in East Hampton. But playing center field, I realized as I got older, I couldn't go back. I could only come forward. And you, thank God you allowed me to do that.
We're talking to Larry Brown. All right. So the big Larry is watched the Lupica boys grown up. He's coached them a little bit. The youngest son, Zach, is I think the one you had did coach a little bit in the summer one time. All right. The boys are always asking me, Michael or LeBron? And here's what I tell him, Coach. I'm going to tee you up on this. I tell him that I think that LeBron James positively impacts a game in more ways than anybody I ever saw. I think he's the greatest all-around player I've ever seen. But if I had to pick one guy to play for my life, it would be Michael. You go ahead.
I've watched LeBron grow. And he gets better and better with age to me. And I think you're right. He does. Well, here's my thing. I spoke to Jerry West one day, and we were talking about the best players, and he told me Kobe was the best. And the reason he said it was Kobe is he said Kobe guarded Dwayne Wade, he guarded Vince Carter, you know, he guarded LeBron, he guarded all of them. None of them guarded him. And that was why, you know, Jerry thought, you know, Kobe was so special. And then I argued with him. I said, Vince, because of my Carolina background, guards everybody as well. And early on, LeBron didn't guard anybody. And there was reasons, probably they didn't want to get him in foul trouble and stuff like that. But now he guards. And he's a very, very willing passer. Now, probably that's the thing he does best, is he gives the ball up and he gives it up early and he gives it up willingly. But you know, if you had to win one game, there's never been a competitor like Michael. And Michael did guard. Michael did rebound. Michael did share the ball. But it's hard for me to have anybody compare, because Bill Russell, to me, is the greatest winner ever.
100%.
Will Chamberlain 100%. Was the greatest talent ever. And Oscar Robinson, you could make a case, might have been as great an all-around player as we've ever seen. And those guys played against each other like 10, 12, 14 times a year. And now when you watch the NBA now, you don't see Westbrook guarding Harden. You know, you don't see an Olajuwon guarding a David Robinson. And I miss that. I don't enjoy that part of the game where the best players don't guard each other. Now, Kawhi Leonard does. you know, Pop will put him on anybody. But it's, and getting back to your question, LeBron's game has elevated so much over the years. He's gotten better and better and more unselfish. And it's kind of neat to watch, because kids need to watch players like that. Because basketball, when it's played the right way, is really a great team game. When it's not, it's ugly.
Coach, what you just said is true. You can't, as a coach, how can you even quantify when the greatest player is also the greatest teammate the way LeBron is?
Yeah, but he's grown into that. His will to win, you know, what has he been to, 6 straight finals?
Going for 7. Yep, he's going for 7. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty remarkable. But, you know, when you talk, you know, I'm a Carolina guy, and, you know, Michael's will to win was so incredible, so extraordinary. And then he takes 2 years off and then comes back and does it exactly the same. That's hard for anybody even to imagine. But I love the game. I love to watch it, and I care about it. And when I see a guy that's a great player that makes his teammates better and gets credit for it, that's what it's all about. And I think LeBron has done that.
Hey, Coach, I was there that night, and you know, I've seen a lot of stuff in my career. You've obviously seen more in basketball. Were you watching the game the night Michael put 55 on the Knicks in the Garden 2 weeks after he'd left minor league baseball?
Yeah, you know, I've had some unique things happen in my life. I coached the game Michael made his return at Indiana.
I was there. I know.
I coached the game, Michael's last game, in Philadelphia. He had played in Washington the night before, and then he played his last game in Philly. I coached Charles Barkley's last game in Philly. He got hurt. Charles really got hurt late in his career. And his career ended, and I coached Reggie in Indiana his last game. And then, you know, I was so anxious to see what Michael would do. So I don't think I ever missed a game I had an opportunity to watch Michael Jordan play, because, you know, again, there was so much admiration and respect for him from all of us that played at Carolina that loved the game. And to understand he takes 2 years off and comes back and plays like that, it's ridiculous.
Talking to the great Larry Brown. So, Coach, you saw what happened last year with the Warriors and the Cavs. And you know, Draymond Green's suspension will become a historical touchstone forever, because if he doesn't get suspended from game 5, they probably win in 5. And I know how hard it is to get 4 games off of LeBron James. Do you see any way the Cavs can do it again this year?
No. And I don't think they have this supporting cast. Now, when they got Bogut, I thought that was good. And yeah, they made a, getting Darren Williams is great, and getting Culver is great, but they got Durant with all these other people. If you were picking a team, the 10 best players in the league, you're going to put Klay Thompson, Seth Curry, Durant, and Green on that team, the 10 best. And then you're going to probably say Andre Iguodala, for what he does, you know, has to be way up there as well. So I just don't see it. I really thought that at the beginning of the year, when Golden State lost a lot of their guys, that they were maybe going to be in a little trouble. But then you start to realize how great those 4 players are. And like you said, what a job, you know, Steve Kerr has done with that group. I just think it's too difficult. As great as LeBron is, as great as Kyrie is, I just think there's too many guns. Let's think about this. Really, Durant's team should have won. They were a quarter away from winning.
Right. Last year.
And all of a sudden now he's he's with Golden State. I just don't think that, you know, Cleveland can do it. But, hey, you said it. LeBron's pretty darn special. And he's not afraid to share it with other people. So we'll never know. We'll never know till it happens.
Coach, did you love it as a coach watching Tyronn Lue have the guts the other night in that game when they came from 25 down against the Pacers to sit Kyrie and Love in the fourth quarter?
I don't know. I think I've done some things in my life that I was proud of and some things that were difficult that I didn't do. I'm not sure. But, you know, that's why the kid's a great coach. He's paid his dues. He's always been a terrific teammate. You got to do what you got to do and not be afraid of the consequence. And I think, you know, I look at Kyrie, he's a pretty special kid. So I think he might not have been happy about it, but, you know, when you're a coach, you got to do what you think is best.
When you look at the Rockets this year, and I think there were probably a lot of people who thought Mike D'Antoni's time had maybe come and gone. He'd had several jobs. But is this an example? And I know that Harden's a pretty damn good basketball player, but of a coach specifically coaching to his talent and to his best player?
No, I think the way Mike D'Antoni coaches is unique, and I think he believes in it so much that it's really effective. But let's think about what they've done. They got Anderson, who is one of the best big three-point shooters going. They got Gordon, who can stretch the floor and can make shots. They brought in Lou Williams, to me, who's the wild card that can score the ball. You know, Trevor Ariza is one of the most underrated players going, and he's got Capella, who can, you know, just does what he has to do. And Mike has allowed Harden to just play. And the way the game's being called, anybody who watched that last game had to be turned off to me about the NBA. Because it was ridiculous at the end of the game, the way the referees now call the game. It was embarrassing to me to watch. But D'Antoni has a system. He makes players play the way that he feels gives them the best chance to win. But Morey, you know, who runs the Rockets, I think surrounded Harden with the people that gives him a chance to coach as well as he's capable of coaching. Because the people they brought in and the style they play are really allowing D'Antoni to be successful. Now, I don't know, Michael, if you can go that far without being able to guard. And I think that's going to be interesting as we move forward.
Last question for my friend Larry Brown. Is the phone still ringing, Coach? Are people still calling to inquire about your interest or availability?
No, I mean, I heard from some people, you know, not on a professional level. I hear from people on a professional level asking me about different college players because I recruited all these kids, Michael, that are now, you know, coming up in the draft. Because the 5 years I was in college going to AAU tournaments and watching kids play, these kids are now all declaring for the draft. So I hear all the time from different pro scouts concerning people. I spent the year going around and watching college people coach. You know, everybody was asking me to help and, you know, be like a consultant. And all I found myself doing was learning. And I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful I'll have a chance. I think I'm a 1,000-pound gorilla. You know, and you got to be pretty secure with yourself to bring somebody older in. And it's not admitting that you need help. I think that's a problem. I just want to, you know, share what I was taught, and I hope that I'll have that chance.
Coach, it's always like a tutorial talking basketball with you. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs. And you know, your greatest challenge is yet to come when we sit down and write the book someday, Stories from a Basketball Life, right?
Well, I just read Coach Eilbeck's book on stories. I mean, you know how much, you know, we all respected him, and I got a lot of them. Someday I'll try to figure it out. When I go to visit my friends that are coaching and that worked for me at one time, oh, they bring up stories that sometimes I don't want anybody else to hear. So it'll be fun.
Coach, again, thank you. Thank you, as always, for your friendship. All right, now go hit some balls because it's getting ready for us to start playing golf again.
Actually, the sun's just creeping through out here. So
what? No, not in the east. That can't possibly be happening.
All right. It's great hearing from you, Michael.
Coach, I'll see you soon. The great Larry Brown on the Mike Lupica podcast. Subscribe to this podcast. Download it. God, we nearly won a damn Webby Award. Leave reader comments because, again, this is the kind of conversation that we have every single week. I'll talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.